Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Thursday. It's March 28, 31 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. And again, we've got some major traffic backups as a result of a tanker truck being on fire there on westbound US 40 just before the Park City exit, causing a traffic delay now. It looks like back to the Jordanell Gondola. If you're coming westbound, and then also we've got some traffic slowing as people make their way from Interstate 80 to US 40 eastbound. They are apparently able to get off the interstate at that point. So we've got traffic blocked though at Park City Hospital, unless you are getting back onto US 40 headed westbound. I think I got that right. Anyway, if you have any updates, you can text us at 435-655-8255. Right now, on the phone with a weather update, we've got Thomas Giboy from the ABC Forecast Center. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Thursday to you, or happy Friday Eve. It's going to be another active day across the state. So we got our brief little break yesterday, and even as we're going throughout this morning, we're already starting to see a few snow showers throughout the Wasatch back, and that chance will only ramp up even more as we go from the morning into the afternoon as a cold front moves in. But as the cold front arrives, our temperatures will warm to likely right around 40 degrees in Park City. So while I think Park City mainly sticks with snow today, there will be a chance that at some point, especially right before the front moves through, we could see some rain mixing in there, and that could lead to some sloppy conditions around Park City. While we'll likely see a better chance of seeing rain down in Heber with that daytime high coming in the mid to upper 40s. So looking at a good chance of snow today. Also, don't be surprised if you hear a few rumbles of thunder outside of any snow showers. It's mainly going to be mostly cloudy, and it will be breezy as well, as we could see some gusts as high as 35 miles per hour even throughout the Wasatch back. The chance for snow sticks around into tonight. It just won't be quite as high compared to what we see out there this afternoon. We'll drop to around a 20% chance during the overnight, and it will be turning colder compared to what we're seeing out there this morning. We'll drop to an overnight low of 23. So the system driving this with this cold front, it's going to stall out in central Utah tonight, and then it's going to bounce back to the north as we go through the day tomorrow, which will lead to more snow showers being likely throughout our Friday as well, roughly a 60% chance of snow. And with that front moving back to the north, that daytime high will come in right around 40 degrees once again. On Friday night, chance of snow showers 80%, overnight low dropping to 31. Then we'll see an even stronger storm system arrive going into the Easter weekend. Saturday into Sunday, at any point, there's going to be roughly an 80 to 90% chance of seeing snow showers. I don't anticipate that it's going to snow the entire Easter weekend, but that chance is going to exist the entire Easter weekend throughout the Wasatch back, as the highs stay right around 40 degrees in Park City, the overnight lows near 30 degrees. So if anybody's planning those Easter egg hunts, at the very least, make sure that you have a contingent to move that inside just in case, just because we will be looking at that good chance for snow. That system's not going to be moving very quickly, and we'll likely continue to see additional snow showers on Monday with that daytime high still staying right around 40 degrees. But by the middle of next week, that's when we should start to calm down. We'll go to mostly sunny skies on Tuesday and for our Wednesday, and we'll also begin to warm up. Should be in the middle 40s in Park City on Tuesday and could actually be right around 50 degrees on Wednesday. Now, as we go between today and tomorrow, I think most of our mountain valleys, including in the Wasatch back, could see anywhere from a trace to 4 inches. But if everything comes together, over half a foot does look achievable, while in our Wasatch Mountains, we obviously could see totals higher than that. So more snow on the way, with plenty of it on the way through the Easter weekend, then finally calming into the middle of next week, Leslie.
Okay, thanks, Thomas.
You're welcome.
And the latest that we have heard is that eastbound traffic is now moving on US 40, so that's good news. But for those of you coming from the Heber Valley, you are still stuck in that traffic as crews look to clear westbound US 40 due to a tanker truck on fire. On the phone with us now, with a look in the backcountry, we've got Nikki from the Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning.
Good morning. So yesterday was another eventful day in the backcountry. With the clear skies, we had numerous reports of both some natural and human-triggered avalanches. These occurred on Superior, Mount Raymond, in the Wolverine Cirque, and multiple other places. Most of these were soft slabs of either new snow or wind-drifted snow that failed somewhere within the new snow or all the way down at the old snow surface, so up to 2 feet deep. Luckily, nobody was injured in any of these avalanches. You can find all of the reports on our website. Elevated winds and cooler temperatures did keep the wet snow at bay as well, but there was a little bit of loose, wet activity by the afternoon, so there could be a bit of a firm crust this morning. We want to think about two things today. The first is going to be the wind-drifted snow. So winds did pick up yesterday, and they picked up overnight and will continue to stay elevated throughout the day. So with these elevated winds and soft snow available for transport, we're going to continue to see wind slabs forming at all upper elevations. They may be hard to spot as we're going to start getting some new snow throughout the day as well. So any slopes that could have wind drifts, so leeward slopes, you're going to want to avoid. As well, the cornices should not be messed with. There were reports of multiple cornice falls yesterday, so give cornices a wide berth. Make sure that you're not underneath them, as they could trigger a wind slab on the slopes below. Second thing we want to think about is just that new snow. So there are going to be some periods of really high precip rates throughout the day, up to 2 inches per hour, especially after the hours of noon. So during any high times of high PI rates, we could see both soft slabs of new snow or just loose dry. So if the precipitation intensity increases, the avalanche danger is going to increase as well. So this morning, we've got a moderate danger in the mountains, but it will rise to considerable as the storm intensifies.
Okay, Nikki, thanks so much. Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong. Later on, Deer Valley President and COO Todd Bennett, along with Vice President of Resort Planning Hannah Tyler, discussed the recent changes made to the snow park redevelopment plans and what's next. And finally, Park City Gallery Association members Megan McIntyre and Katarina Chigalise with Summit Gallery talk about this month's gallery stroll. That's happening on Friday night. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests are the authors of the new book, The Secret Life of Data, Navigating Hype and Uncertainty in the Age of Algorithmic Surveillance, and about how the data from our daily lives is actually being used. Then a conversation about robotics with Chris Nelson, Regional Director of FIRST, an organization that prepares kids for the future through robotic programs. All of that, of course, coming up on Cool Science Radio, which you can hear every Thursday between 9 and 10. Good morning. Well, the Snydeville Basin Planning Commission unanimously recommended approval for a new parking garage at Canyons Village. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it's now up to the county's top planning official.
The five-level garage would be built on the Cabriolet lot in two phases. Two levels would go up this summer. The other three could open for the 25-26 ski season. The 1,800-spot garage would consolidate the rest of Canyons Village parking, meaning the upper lots would eventually be redeveloped. The commission's discussion Tuesday was a continuation of its March 12th meeting. That was when commissioners heard public comment, which was generally positive despite concerns about traffic circulation and a potential bottleneck at the Cabriolet. Tuesday night, commissioners dug into a 2023 traffic study commissioned by Canyon's master developer, TCFC Finance, which would build the garage. Under TCFC's plan, cars would enter the garage from the south on Aussie Way and leave through an exit-only ramp near the main roundabout with the Park City logo. Summit County Transportation Planner Brandon Brady pointed commissioners to two areas of concern, the main roundabout and the intersection of Lower Village Road and Aussie Way. He said it's possible the roundabout will need an additional lane to get more cars onto Lower Village.
That's why I recommended also the not building it now, but just leaving it so the right-of-way is preserved. So if we did need two coming out of there, that it would be possible in the future.
He also thought putting a roundabout at the intersection of Lower Village and Aussie would help in the mornings. TCFC Representative Spencer White said the extra lane recommendation was not supported in the traffic data. As far as the roundabout,
that's a recommendation from our own engineer based on a 2030 full build-out of the Canyons Resort peak Residence Day Saturday. Worst case scenario, not reduce it by 25% with paid parking, other transportation mitigation measures that we are currently using and working on within the Canyons Resort.
The traffic study showed the Lower Village and Aussie intersection fails on extreme days currently. Brady said extra turn lanes there could suffice too. Commissioner John Cusera ultimately said they could leave it up to Community Development Director Pat Putt and keep an eye on the intersections during construction. The commissioners voted unanimously Tuesday to recommend Putt approve the garage. Commissioner Thomas Cook was absent. Putt, who has the final permitting authority as the county's top planning official, said he's likely to make a decision next week. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Good morning. Again, last I've heard on the traffic situation there on US 40 is that traffic is flowing eastbound on 40. However, those of you headed into the Park City area from the Heber Valley are still stuck in traffic. That due to a tanker truck being on fire earlier this morning, first reported at about 7:30. So Stay put and tune in to KPCW for the latest updates. Again, if you do have any new messages, you can give us a text at 435-655-8255. In the studio now with a recap from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Councilmember Roger Armstrong. Good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's start with the first quarter financial. Staff projected sales tax revenues between 3 to 5%. We heard from Financial Officer Matt Levitt saying they came in at 4%, so things are good. Any concerns?
No, I think everybody in the community is probably happy to see the upturn that we've seen. You know, at the beginning of the season, it was pretty dry. There wasn't much snow through December. As I recall, it was 50 plus degrees in sunscreen in January, and then the snow hit and the business came back. So I think we're looking pretty good. It's hard to tell at the beginning financial review. You know, we'll see how the rest of the year goes, but it's a nice start.
All right. County Council members reappointed Don Sargent and Alex Peterson to the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. Were there as many applicants for the east side as there were for the Snyderville Basin?
There weren't. We had three. Two of them were reapplying. And generally, if people are doing a good job, you know, when they reapply, we like to keep them in their position. And Alex is both of them. Don's got years of experience in planning. And Alex is such a great community member and such a great board member. I've served on a couple of different committees with him, and he's just a pleasure to work with.
So I'm thinking also it's probably pretty tough to get somebody on the Planning Commission when you've got a major proposal like Cedar Crest.
Yeah, that would be a strange one to walk into the middle of. That's, you know, at this point, I think we're in the fourth year of that at least, and it's still moving along, but it's moving the way that we anticipated that kind of village overlay would. It's, you know, we're trying to make sure that it's a process. That's why I asked the question last night, whether it's a public process and the public is aware of it and has some input into it. So that part seems good. I think we heard yesterday that maybe there are some concerns that it can feel sometimes like the developers are leading that process, and maybe staff needs to take more control over the discussions. And so we've asked the county manager just to have that conversation and see if we can get that corrected.
Okay, and then in the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission, Tyann Mooney got reappointed along with a newcomer, Matt Nagy, and one of the commissioners reapplied but didn't get selected. So why did the council decide to go ahead with Matt Nagy?
Matt is, you know, I think during his run for city council, it was really nice to see him. He's a very smart guy. He's a very thoughtful guy. I think when you're on the planning commission, so much of that is code-driven, and you're either writing code, writing the general plan, or reviewing applications in light of code to see whether they comply or not, and then doing those brain calculations about what you can change and what you can't change. And I just liked his approach when he ran for city council. And I thought, again, just speaking for myself, having somebody who's a little bit younger, he's not a kid, but somebody who's a little bit younger on the planning commission is maybe not a bad idea.
All right, let's move on to the lobbyist recap session. The county's lobbyists from Foxley and Pignanelli recapped the legislative session, saying it was productive, a record 591 bills, nothing that seemed negatively targeted at local government. Or is that how you feel?
Yeah, and that was the result of actually a lot of work on our part. I think when the session ended last year, it was 3 years of, you know, Summit County getting pummeled, and I think we needed to try and figure out whether we could start some better communication, because it wasn't the legislators, just like local legislators, we rely on information that we receive to make decisions. And the information that they were largely receiving was inaccurate. Summit County hates affordable housing. We won't build any affordable housing. You can't get anything built in Summit County. And so we started, I think Melina and I, through Mike Kohler, our representative in the State House, he set up a meeting with leadership, and we met with President Adams and Vickers and Stevenson and the new Speaker of the House, Schultz, and Casey Snyder, who's number four, and laid out for them what we're actually doing. And then Casey actually came up here and spent a day with us touring every affordable housing project, and I think that was useful.
Yeah, but we aren't building anything new on the west side. We've got, of course, those 12 units there in Lower Pine Brook. Compared to what Park City's doing, Summit County is kind of in the back seat here.
Yeah, we've only built about 1,000 units in the last 6 years. We're not pulling our weight. That's a massive amount of housing, 1,000 units. Slopeside just opened last year with 1,200 beds. It's not like we've been sitting on this, not doing anything. And the basin is starting to get full. Now, I had a conversation with the mayors in our last COG meeting about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And what we discussed at our November council retreat was, instead of being reactive to developers coming in saying we want to build 1,100 units of residential and we'll give you 300 units of affordable housing, let's decide what we want. Let's be proactive. Let's decide where we want to start to locate housing, how we might tie that into the transit system, how we build something better rather than responding to these things and trying to shoehorn them in. So the east side, I think, is going to be a wave, and they need some affordable housing out there anyway. And the Speaker of the House would call that generational housing, and he specifically said, what are you doing about housing the kids of our current homeowners so that they can come back? They agreed to form a committee of the mayors and me to start working on those issues, to start kind of laying out areas where residential would make sense, where it's near transit, or we could place transit in close proximity so that we can come up with a plan moving forward for housing, so that it's not just West Hills coming in saying, okay, we want 1,600 rooftops and we'll give you a couple of hundred units of affordable housing. That's not sustainable, and I don't think that's what we want.
Yeah. So back to this idea that, you know, we weren't targeted by the legislature as we have been for the last 3 years. I'm going to venture that the legislature took some really negative hits, too, with some of the media reports, you know, about what they were doing. Does that have anything to do with it?
I don't know what their thought process was, but I don't think so. They haven't seemed to be reined in over the past 3 years, and they took those body shots during that time period, too. So I don't know why this year would have been different. I think we had a change in leadership. Speaker Schultz came in, Speaker Wilson left, and I think it was just kind of a new start. We'll see whether it sticks, but I'll take the relief where we can get it, put it that way.
Senate and House leadership apparently are going to be publishing a list of study items in about a month, things that they're going to take a look at in the interim. Anything you hope that's on that?
Yeah, I think some of the TRT funding ideas, you know, things are getting more and more expensive, from roads to EMS and fire and everything in between. And we have very few means of dealing with that. I think everybody heard the discussion that we had last year about possibly going through a property tax raise. And that didn't work for me because we had two straight years of the adjustments that the assessor was making to come up with a more equitable system of valuing properties and raising some values on properties that hadn't been revalued for a number of years. So it wasn't a time to do the property tax raise, but that's frequently the only way to keep up with inflationary pressures that we have. As you know, we redid the entire EMS system. That's an additional $4 million hit above our baseline budget from the year before. And in Park City and in cities that have resorts within their communities, they have up to a 1% resort tax that they can charge. And they can use that for, actually, I think that particular resort tax, there are no restrictions on it. You can use it for a variety of things, from law enforcement to whatever. What happened in this legislative session is they added third-class counties to a bill that was passed last year, but it was 4th, 5th, and 6th counties, where you can use some of those funds for a variety of things to combat the effects of tourism, like law enforcement, like EMS, like search and rescue, the landfill, a number of other things. So that was a win this year, but more flexibility on TRT. It's another area where property taxes are largely paid by our residents or second homeowners. Sales taxes, we've said forever, whenever we have to do a big lift like we did with the transit system, sales taxes are largely paid, 50% are paid by visitors that come here. So it's less of an impact, still an impact on our residents, but it's less of an impact.
You spoke a lot about how to talk to lawmakers regarding the Kimball Junction interchange. The strategy is to emphasize impact to residents, not preparing for the Olympics. Why that?
Yeah, well, the Speaker of the House, when we, you know, in the middle of, as you know, we were kind of racing during the legislative session to see how far we could push the Dakota Pacific discussion, because we were told if there were things related to that discussion that legislation could help, funding Kimball Junction fixes and trying to get that on the STIP was teed up as one of the big ones, that we should, you know, at some point during the legislative session, it'd be too late to draft a bill and run that bill. We also talked about restructuring the HTRZ so that we could get more benefit from that if we impose an HTRZ there. Those are both issues that I suspect will be discussed in interim. They weren't able to do anything with UDOT. The process with UDOT was incomplete insofar as the EIS goes, and their choice of alternative, that's not going to happen until the end of this year, beginning of next year. And then in the middle of all that, a message was delivered back to Molina and me that Speaker Schultz said specifically, we are not going to commit tens of millions of dollars for a two-week event, for people coming in for a two-week event or a three-week event. And so we have to show a need now and focus on that need now. And by the way, once we get this fix in place, that will also benefit the Olympics. So you should add that legislature to your thinking. But it really is about focusing on how it, and you know, some of those impacts are obvious. You're talking today about a jackknife tanker truck. Senator Adams is the head of MIDA. He has said that the Mayflower development is going to be extraordinary because airport to Mayflower, no stoplights, you can get there in one fell swoop. Faster, theoretically, than you can get into Kimball Junction and our ski resorts on 224 or 248. It's going to be important to him to fix the clogs at 40 and 80, which is a mess. But fixing this, it's an economic issue. We are a major economic driver in the state. Our access to the airport is a giant competitive advantage for us over Aspen, over, you know, pick almost any other resort in Colorado. You can get here quicker from our airport or any place within this region than you can from Denver to the ski resorts there. That's a competitive advantage that goes away if we continue to lock up these roadways. It's financial.
I wanted to ask you about this. You being an attorney, the state legislature changed the definition of meeting under the Open and Public Meeting Act. It's not a meeting now if it's not convened by the council chair. So there could be a quorum of council members discussing items in private?
I still think you would violate the Open and Public Meetings Act if you were, you know, I think that relates more, if I understand it right, I think that relates more to being able to take action. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a quorum and you think you have a meeting, and I guess, you know, what I say when we start meetings is, you know, welcome to the March 27th session of the Summit County Council, and the meeting is open, you know, something along those lines. If you don't do that, any action you take, I assume, could be invalidated. So you have to be careful about it. An odd one.
Yeah. Anything else you want to mention?
I think I just have to mention briefly, we can't fix it here today, but there's something really disturbing at our Rotary meeting on Tuesday. A young woman from the high school indicated that a fellow student had drawn a swastika on a piece of paper, and was showing it around, and also apparently said the phrase, or wrote the phrase, "kill the Jews." And she reported that. It feels to her and her family like nothing is happening with that. And she also feels frightened. And that, I just want to say, is not acceptable in this community. And I think I'm waiting to hear some response, an official response from the school district. I know that they're bound, if they're doing investigations, if they're trying to analyze, you know, consequences or whatever they're doing, I would hope that they're doing that in a thoughtful manner. But at some point, they've got to speak up. I had a conversation with Meredith Reed, who's on the school board. She is very distressed by it. We talked about, you know, what we can do as a community. We have to do better as parents. We have to do better as educators. We have to make sure that we take that kind of behavior out of our schools, that we educate that that's wrong, and that starts at home, that starts throughout our community, to talk to each other better, to behave better, and we have to make sure that our students feel safe in school. If they report something that happened, they need to know that they've got support. And, you know, I was proud to stand with that young lady on Tuesday. We had Deputy Chief Casey Bates there. We had Chad Hoffmeyer, one of our deputies, both of whom are former school resource officers. And within the statutes that were enacted this year, the legislature was a requirement for more school resource officers in schools. But we have to do better. And as a community, we have to have these conversations. We have to raise this to a level where it's not under the surface, where we know that all is not unicorns and bubbles in the community, and that there's some dark stuff out there.
Okay, Roger, I got to leave it there. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong, you're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, as we've been reporting, Deer Valley unveiled what it's calling an evolved plan for its Snow Park Village and presented it to a crowd Tuesday night. In the studio with more details, I have Deer Valley President and Chief Operating Officer Todd Bennett, along with Vice President of Resort Planning, Hannah Tyler. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leslie.
This evolved plan, it looks very familiar, I guess, other than the kind of the partnerships around microtransit and swapping the big buses out for smaller buses more frequently. It essentially looks like the plan that the group Protect the Loop had put forward. I mean, when that happened, we kind of heard from Deer Valley, oh, that was impossible. So what changed here?
Yeah, a couple of things, Leslie. We did... For the last 18 months, we've had extensive engagement with the stakeholders from around the community. That includes city staff, that includes Mayor Nan Worrell, that includes our guests, that includes our staff. So we wanted to really understand what folks were looking for. So that evolved plan came from two things, one of which was we refocused on the essence of Deer Valley. So we did about a year-long study with interviews with community members to really make sure that we knew what are the 9 principles that are most important to Deer Valley. And then also we went into the specific ideas. So groups that you mentioned and other folks around the community, bringing those ideas together, working with our engineers to see what was feasible, what wasn't feasible, what worked for us, Deer Valley, and tried to thread that needle and bring it all together. So that's the evolved plan that we brought to the community. And we had almost 300 people on Tuesday evening and shared that in person.
Yeah, so Hannah, I mean, you took a good look then at what Protect the Loop had kind of presented and thought that, you know what, maybe we can go back and redo this?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of what the community feedback was and some of those ideas that they brought forward, but also some of the feedback from city staff. So I think it's an awesome combination of those two groups coming together. And we took, I think, the best ideas from both, as well as whatever worked for the resort and our guests and our staff. And I think that's what we've put together, and that's what you saw on Tuesday.
Yeah, so let's look at some of those changes. I mean, what? We've got a split transportation mode. We've got underground drop-offs. No transit center on Doe Pass Road. The transit drop-off is underground. We've got dedicated ski school drop-offs closer to the lifts, a new traffic study. Again, all of those items I know were presented by PTL.
Yeah, we looked at, as you mentioned, like access and drop-off were two of the things that we heard loud and clear, not only from our staff, but from our guests, from constituents, like you mentioned, from the city. So we looked at it, we found a way, and what we're really excited about is one of the adjustments that we made is we are splitting traffic. So there are going to be two different levels. So underground, you're going to have a transit drop-off area, and then you're also going to have a passenger car drop-off area. So we split that. Today, as you know, out in at Deer Valley, they're kind of next to each other. So if you're coming from transit, you have to cross a large number of lanes. So the intent was to stagger those vertically so that we can have a safer ingress and egress for passengers at the drop-off area. We did keep our small circulation area for ski school drop-off. We know that's really important. Hannah and I are parents. We know a lot of parents in the area that like that ability for ski school. How do they get their kids in and out quickly? So I think that was really important. And then we also looked at traffic flow with the adjustment on the drop-off area. That drop-off area is intended to be more of one-way traffic so that you get to the top closest to the lifts. One-way traffic in and out, and I think that's going to really help the circulation. And the way that we built this, we also realigned slightly the new Carpenter lift that's coming and the Silver Lake gondola that's coming, so that we were able to get, when you were dropped off, you take vertical transportation from those two levels below directly in between those two lifts. So our goal was always to make it as good or better, and then we think we found some of these tricks and solves to make it even better. All of the skier services have been relocated right to where that vertical transportation comes up onto the ski beach. So if you need to drop off your skis or you need to get connected with lessons, we made a significant adjustments there as well.
Yeah, it seems like cars may be getting preferential treatment here. And I say that because they look like they're closer to the slopes, one less escalator to ride. Why the decisions to put the buses on the lowest level as opposed to making it the easiest for bus riders?
Yeah, that's a good question. The most important thing was to split it, but that's actually a new idea, Leslie, and we're going to continue to evolve the plan, and we're going to continue to look at that, and so that's something we can look at. It very well may have been due to height, but I'd want to go back to the engineers and ask, why did they split that? Because we do have two roadways coming in. We have to split the traffic, and one has to dive down, and one stays up a little bit more, but we'll certainly look at that.
All right, and then with the day skier parking reduction and paid parking coming, How is Deer Valley going to work to incentivize people using transit?
You know, we've done that this year. We're going to continue to try new things. We ran an incentive for our staff this year to go try Richardson Flats. I rode Richardson Flats for the first time this year, and we got a lot of good feedback from the staff to say, hey, thanks for incenting me to try it. Now I know if I live in Midway or Heber, this is a path that we're going to do it. So I think there's two things we want to do. We want to incent trial. We did that with some gift cards back to the resort, and we're going to continue to explore ways for guests. But I think it's a little bit of an empirical approach. You've got to try a few things, you've got to measure, you've got to study, and we're committed to keep doing that. But I don't have the magic answer yet today. We're going to just keep trying different ideas.
Okay. And Hannah, I know with the roundabouts, you knew that it was important for people coming down from Royal Street, American Flag Subdivision, that area, that they're now going to have pretty much direct access to what, the drop-off area?
Absolutely, and I think one of their requests was they wanted to be able to make a right turn when they got out of Royal Street and be able to drop off in a very similar manner to they do today. But generally speaking, the roundabouts actually just keep traffic moving. So to Todd's point of like, we wanted to make sure that we were improving the traffic flow, we believe that those are a really great method for us to do that. And then there's obviously ancillary benefits to the neighbors that are able to have easier access to the new drop-off location.
All right, and what does this mean then for the special events, the summer concerts, you know, where we had traffic, you know, with buses going one way and vehicles going the other way, but vehicles doing whatever they wanted, really. Everyone's kind of going in the same direction at this point?
Yeah, as you approach, I guess it would be Deer Valley Drive West, coming up Deer Valley Drive West, as you enter into the drop-off area, there's going to be one entry and one exit. So it's going to force a little bit more circular flow. If you were coming in from the Deer Valley East Drive, and correct me if I'm wrong, Hannah, you'd be coming across Doe Pass Road, then coming up and coming in that drop-off. And that's most of the flow today, and I think folks know that, like most of the folks are coming up that way today and into the drop-off. But it's gonna create a little bit more direct circular flow. You won't have the opportunity to kind of make that come all the way up Deer Valley Drive East and make that right-hand turn just before the drop-off area and then snake back. So we've eliminated that in this plan, and we think that's gonna help.
All right, and then will that mean paid parking then in the future for summer concert goers, or?
We're still working through the plan. You know, the parking garage is gonna be very, very expensive to build, and we are gonna have to institute paid parking. We haven't figured out all the details of who pays, when they pay, what time of year, but paid parking is definitely coming.
All right, and then let's talk a little bit about how the new concept would improve the pedestrian flow.
Yeah, you can take that. You know, we really looked at the plan that we had before and worked with the city and said, what are your concerns about pedestrian traffic? And I think one of the biggest improvements is pedestrian connectivity to the neighborhoods. So a lot of that loop, there is significant sidewalk, but there's also significant stretches that don't have sidewalk. And so we're gonna basically create a sidewalk loop throughout the entire Lower Deer Valley loop. And then we've also reduced the number of entrances to the parking garage, specifically on Deer Valley Drive East. And so before, if you were a pedestrian, you were possibly crossing like three or four entrances to the garage. There's now only one. And so we really took that feedback from the city and tried to streamline the garage to then reduce the conflict with the pedestrians on the exterior of the development.
Yeah, we all know sitting there waiting for people to walk past the driveway there or the access. Some neighbors have expressed concerns about emergency vehicle access. What does that look like under the new plan?
So similar to the last plan, we're going to be working with the emergency agencies to make sure that they feel like each agency can have proper access. We're working with the city engineer as well as the chief building official. And then we will be meeting with the fire district as well about their access. And so that's paramount to us as a resort. But also we recognize that that's going to be very important to this community. So we'll maintain proper access.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about as we look to that new gondola there. Again, connecting all the way up to the Mayflower East Village area. What is that? I mean, so it would go from Snow Park, where?
Sure. The gondola is intended. There are two lines. One goes from Snow Park Village, Deer Valley Snow Park Village. It's going to then go to Silver Lake. That'll be a stop. And then from Silver Lake, it'll go up to Park Peak. At Park Peak, we'll have a beautiful new lodge up there. And then on the other side of the lodge, there will be another gondola line that's going to go from there down to Big Dutch Peak, which will be an intermediate or a midway station, and then all the way down to the Deer Valley East Village.
All right. So when do you envision those gondolas being installed?
The gondola line coming from the Deer Valley East Village is targeted to be up and running for not next ski season, but the following. So we're looking at 18-ish months to have that line in. We're still working through the construction plan and phasing and timing coming from the Deer Valley Snow Park side. So that's a little bit more TBD. That's going to be a little bit later than the one coming from the Deer Valley East Village, but the intent is to connect those two up at Park Peak in the next few years.
All right. So with this new plan, have you reached out to those five homeowner associations that are suing you over the approval of the road vacation?
I haven't had any direct conversations, but we did have representatives there on Tuesday night. They asked questions and both in the public forum and also one-on-one afterwards. So I'm confident that they have a good understanding of this plan.
All right. So no word on whether or not they're going to withdraw the lawsuit?
We haven't had any discussions on that.
Any more public open houses planned for people to see this presentation?
For this presentation specifically, no. But we are committed to having public presentations. I think our next one is in May. So we're going to go May and then June. So we have those dates up at on our website. Let me get that correct. It's expandedexcellence.deervalley.com. The plan that we shared on Tuesday night, all of the slides are also up now at expandedexcellence.deervalley.com. So if folks are interested to get that information, they can go to the website and get that to get up to speed.
All right. What's the timeline on all of this?
We're still working on our construction phasing and timing. The goal is to break ground next spring. We've got a lot. However, we have a lot of planning process. And Hannah, if you want to talk a little bit about the pieces that we've got with the city to make sure everybody's good with the plan.
Yeah, so we still need to resubmit this evolved plan. So once we do that, we'll be working with the staff pretty regularly before we get to Planning Commission, and then we recognize we're going to have some significant Planning Commission meetings throughout 2024. And then to that end, our goal is to submit for building permit and then hopefully get a shovel on the ground in the spring of 25.
Okay, and that would be, I mean, it's going to be phased, so
yes.
What would we see? I mean, what's kind of the first thing that would be done?
I think we definitely need to do some utility work. As you're probably aware, there's significant utility work that needs to be done anyways, and so that's, we have to do that first before we can actually start to work on the garage. But right now, we're still working with our contractor on a construction phasing process, and then we will be presenting that construction mitigation plan to the city and to Planning Commission, and there'll be a pretty ample public process for the community to give feedback on what that looks like.
Yeah, and in terms of how many seasons we're talking about getting this done? Four?
Three to five.
Yeah.
Three to five, okay. And would parking or buses always be allowed then to come through to the Snow Park Village as that construction is happening? Or are you going to have to shuttle everybody over to East Village?
Yeah, we're still getting into the details of that. I mean, to build a parking garage in a place where you can build for about 6 or 7 months a year is challenging. So we're still getting into those details. But, you know, the goal from Deer Valley is always to make it as seamless as possible. So we've got some work to do to figure out how do we make sure that folks can drive in and park, and those who don't want to park and take transit can still get in, and it's still a seamless experience. But for sure, during the construction process, you'll see walls. You'll see those walls moving week to week and month to month, and we and from past experience, you got to get that out, and you got to get that plan. And there's 9 versions of that, and it's version A for 3 weeks, and then it's version B for 4 more weeks. And so we got to get into those details.
All right. And then with the negotiation with Park City, Deer Valley's agreed to put up $15 million for some transit or improvements or something out near Quinn's Junction. Is there anything that Deer Valley would like to see the city spend that $15 million on, or are you just, you know, just handing it over?
No, you know, it's a partnership. It was something that we talked about during the negotiations, was what do we do to bind us together? What's going to bring us together where we actually have to solve problems for the community? And so the way that this works is we put in $15 million, the city's putting in $15 million, and essentially then we're the decision-making board ourselves in the city, so we're going to have an opportunity to do that. But Mayor Nan and I have talked about going and finding other sources of money, so whether it be state or federal or maybe tied to the Olympics. And so can we grow that $30 million pool to even bigger? And the folks that might come to the table, they would also have say and input on how the money is being spent. But the intent and the way that the agreement is being constructed is that we do focus on 2 of the biggest issues for the community, transportation and housing.
Okay. Anything else you guys think we ought to know at this point?
No, I think that's it. We'll make sure that we have those dates up on the website for the next open house community meeting that's going to be in May. And we'll have that up at expandedexcellence.deervalley.com.
Okay. Todd Bennett and Hannah Tyler, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, Park City's monthly gallery stroll will be held tomorrow night from 6 to 9 p.m. in the studio with details and some of the highlights. I have gallery director from Summit Gallery, Katarina Chickalese, and on the phone with us, stuck in traffic, the owner of Summit Gallery, Megan McIntyre. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Megan, yes, thanks so much.
Megan, what can you report since you're stuck in traffic? Nothing moving yet, huh?
Well, I-40 is at a standstill here this morning, so bummed to be stuck in traffic, but glad I could still join in.
Okay. So when and where and how do people know where to go tomorrow night? Megan, you want to start with that?
Sure. So tomorrow night is the Park City Gallery Association's gallery stroll. It goes from 6 to 9 p.m. It's mostly located on Main Street, with 2 of our participating galleries off of Main Street, but very nearby and accessible by public transit.
All right. So how many galleries are we going to have?
There are 13 in total.
Great. Okay. Now, can all 25 of Park City's galleries participate, or is this only open to those who belong to the association?
So this one is only open to the galleries and the association.
Okay. Let's see. I know that the gallery stroll is supported by the restaurant tax fund. How so?
So that is a fund that we get every year as part of their tax grant, and we are able to use those funds to support our stroll through advertising. We have a lot of fun themed strolls planned this year, and some of those funds will go to that as well. So it's a big part of what we do, and we are very appreciative of that fund.
All right. And then how do people know where to go? I mean, what galleries are participating?
So you can find all the galleries that are part of the Gallery Association in our pamphlet. You can find it at different coffee shops in town, at the visitor center. So you can pick up a pamphlet and find out what galleries are participating. This week we have 5 galleries that are hosting events for the gallery stroll.
Okay. And are they signified? I mean, I think they have maybe a flag flying outside or something?
Yes, so there will be flags outside of each gallery participating.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the some of those that are kind of offering a little bit more than art. Montgomery Lee Fine Art will be hosting an artist reception here. Can you guys tell us anything about Dean Bradshaw and Joel McKay?
So those are 2 of the fantastic artists that Montgomery Lee represents year-round. But the artists will actually be in attendance at the artist reception, which will be great. And you'll be able to see a curated collection of their work during that reception.
Okay, and I kind of looked up, and it looks like Dean is a landscape and portrait painter from Utah using oil-based paint and a palette knife. Joe, also a Western landscape artist. You know, as owner, maybe Megan, what do you think? I mean, are landscapes the most popular paintings over portraits and abstracts?
You know, it's such a mixed bag. 1 week we will only be selling barns in the gallery. The next week it's all pop art. You never really know who's going to walk in the door. I would say being in our beautiful Park City area, landscapes tend to be very popular, but really the visitors coming from all over the world, make it hard to predict what is going to be the most popular any given week.
Yeah, and I guess what is it about landscapes? I mean, is it just people want to bring the outdoors inside?
I think they want to bring a little piece of Park City home with them often. And so being able to, you know, find a perfect scene and bring that with them to, say, Florida, where they're not going to be enjoying our snowy mountains all the time, is really appealing.
All right. And then Katarina, Prospect Executive Suites, JG Gallery is also offering something special. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so they'll be serving appetizers and a warm beverage. They're located off of Main Street, so it's kind of a fun place to kick off your stroll and then come up to Main Street afterwards.
Okay, and they're going to be premiering art pieces by Stephanie Hawk from the Salt Lake Valley, Carol Wade from Park City, and then Jay Kelly, a collage artist from California.
Yes.
Tell us, it sounds like the Create PC, the Arts Collective there on Kearns Boulevard, also part of this?
Yes, so they are also located off of Main Street. They're pretty close to each other. One is right by Tupelo, Create PC is right next to Tupelo, and then JG Gallery is right in Prospector.
Okay, so people can either maybe start that way and come up,
or kind of finish off there.
All right, let me see. And then at your gallery, Summit Gallery, tell us about this. It sounds like you just recently moved, Megan?
Yes, so we are hosting our official grand reopening party. Though we've been in business for almost 6 years, we just relocated to a bigger, more improved space. So we're right at the base of the town lift, and we're just going to be hosting a really fun evening, open to everybody, but really getting our collectors, our artists together to celebrate our new move. A fun thing at 7:30 p.m., we will be doing an art giveaway. So we have five different small pieces of artwork that are up for grabs, and it will just be a simple name drawing. You can enter any time during the gallery stroll and be present at 7:30 to win.
All right. Can you talk a little bit about your featured artists?
Yes, so we are really focusing on all of the 20 artists that we represent, celebrating all of those artists as they have been part of the Summit Gallery family for the last 6 years. So it'll be a mixed bag of everybody, but specifically Cynthia McLaughlin, a local artist, will have a lot of her work up, as well as Elizabeth Walsh, who is local to Utah as well.
All right. How is it that galleries serve artists? I mean, besides just displaying their work.
So working with artists, we like to support them in all of their endeavors. So whether it's art shows that they're doing or being supportive in, you know, helping with the curation of their different collections. I think when you're a gallery, you have a really intimate relationship with artists. And so it's fun. We get to know them on a very personal level.
Yeah. And then how do you decide who makes it into the Summit Gallery? Is it just work that you like, or?
Oh, it's always a challenge. There's more talented artists than there is wall space in the world. And so we try to curate a collection that complements itself and doesn't compete. So we try to make sure that we have an artist that kind of fills each different niche, like pop art, landscape, while, you know, working together and not competing.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention? Did I skip over?
Probably just it's a very free, fun family event. It happens on the last Friday of every month, and you can view all of the upcoming strolls on our website, parkcitygalleryassociation.com.
Okay. Megan McIntyre, Katarina Chickalese, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, as a way to celebrate its 10th anniversary of doing business in Park City, the founders of Plenty, which offer exclusive leadership training and retreats, have published their first book, Leading with Light. Jennifer Mulholland and Jeff Shuck have studied and practiced leadership their entire professional careers, and while they say that the leadership space is well saturated, Mulholland says they felt that there was more to say and they wanted to share their unique message.
Leading with Light is really awakening yourself to be more of you. And who is that person? What works for you? What's your natural way? It's for conscious leaders all over the place looking for something more. They may not know what that is. They might be in a transition. They might be outgrowing a certain career or have an idea that's just calling them forth. So Leading with Light is kind of a guidebook or a blueprint to help them discover what that is.
The book discusses four lights of conscious leadership. She defines as being more aware, aligned, and intentional with how people lead themselves and others. She explains the first light of conscious leadership is recognizing that you're more than your personality and ego and part of something greater. It is a spiritual message, she says, but not a religious one.
We fundamentally believe, especially since post-COVID, like we don't live a personal life and a professional life anymore. Actually, we never did. But we live one life. We are that common denominator. And so what would life and work look like if we could bring our whole selves to wherever we chose to show up? And so, yeah, the spiritual nature is like bringing different practices and tools into the business environment so that those parts of ourselves don't have to be separate.
They will be signing books at Plenty's Retreat Center called Heart Space. It's located next to the Hyatt Place on State Route 224 tonight from 6 to 8:30 p.m. And the Park City Mark tennis bubble will remain closed for the rest of the indoor season. Severe winds on March 1st tore a hole in the Mark's tennis bubble. City officials originally said that the bubble and courts would be closed until March 27th. Now they've announced that the area will be closed through the end of the indoor season. Park City Recreation Director Ken Fisher says after further investigation, they found that the bubble doors were also damaged in the storm.
Three of the four doors are damaged and will need to be replaced. So without operational doors, even if we were to repair the bubble, there's no way to get it back up this year.
Whether the bubble will be replaced or repaired hasn't been decided. Fisher says they're still working with an insurance company to figure out how much repairing the bubble would cost.
To replace the bubble, the doors, the lights, a whole bubble package, it could be upwards of $500,000.
The Mark team, it says, is working to open those outdoor courts as soon as possible.